Good evening. I want to thank Rabbi Orlian. I want to thank Rabbi Orlian for hosting us in this beautiful shul. I want to thank the White Shul for really planning this event and sponsoring it. I want to thank all the other shuls that were involved in also being, you know, being part of this event. I'm here tonight to tell you a story. To tell you a story about an amazing woman. A woman who changed my life. Had a huge impact on my life. I guess I could say I owe her my life. I also owe her my wife. A woman who I call my Rebbe. And I tell my students, I'll share ideas and I'll say, oh, you know, here's an idea for my Rebbe. They say, who's Rebbe? What? I say, well, her name is, you know, I say, her name is? I say, yeah, that's a new world, you know. But it's the truth. It's the real truth. A woman who had a small home and an enormous heart. A heart so big that she nourished tens of thousands of people with her love. She also nourished their stomachs. And her name is Rabbanit Hani Machlis Aleha Shalom. But first, a joke. She loved jokes. So these two Irishmen, and the Irish love to drink, and they're walking their dogs, and they pass the pub, and you know, the Irishman, the bottle. You gotta do what you gotta do. But they're walking their dogs, and there's a big sign outside the pub. And it says, no pets allowed. So the first guy says, listen, I gotta go in for a drink. The other one says, what are you doing? And it says, no pets allowed. He goes, don't worry. Takes out his sunglasses, puts them on, and walks into the bar. It's a big bouncer. Says, hey, what do you think you're doing? It says, no pets allowed. He says, excuse me, sir, that's my seeing eye dog. So the bouncer says, oh, I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. Come in. Have a drink on the house. Other friend says, wow, that was pretty good. He also takes out his sunglasses, puts them on, walks into the bar. And the big bouncer says, what do you think you're doing? He says, excuse me, sir, it's my seeing eye dog. The bouncer says, what? A chihuahua? A chihuahua's a tiny dog. And the guy says, oh, is that what they gave me? That was one of the last jokes. That was one of the last jokes I told my mother-in-law. She always used to say, when I would see her, she'd say, oh, yeah, what's the chiddush for today? What's the Dvar Torah? You had an idea? Always, always. What's the inspiration? And then she'd say, invariably, okay, you know, after that, like, Aaron, have a good joke? So that was one of the last ones of the day. It has no objective value, just sentimental value for me. That's what I'd say. See, the fact that Mrs. Machlis loved jokes it's important to mention because she was so ordinary. She wasn't like, you know, she wasn't like superhuman. She was a regular person in every way. A kid from Brooklyn, grew up from a regular family. You know, she loved good food, likes good music. You know, she liked animals, you know, she liked the shop, you know, just totally ordinary. She also loved to learn. And she loved Shabbos. She loved Shabbos. And Mrs. Machlis understood that there's so many people who don't appreciate Yiddishkeit. So many people around her, across the Jewish world, who don't appreciate Shabbos. Don't appreciate Torah and Mitzvahs. And she decided she's going to try to share that. And she understood something so simple and so significant and universal. And that is that everybody is the same. We're all the same. We all long for love. All of us. We all long for meaning. And we need to eat. We all appreciate good food. And Rabbanit Machlis had boatloads of all those three commodities. Great cook. She had endless love for people. And she was very learned. And a deep appreciation and understanding of Torah and Yiddishkeit. So, at the age of 21, she got married, this kid, this little girl from Brooklyn. And she decided she wants to move to Israel. And she's going to try to open her home. It sounds like such a simple strategy, right? Isn't it just something so, you know, elementary? Cute idea, right? Cute idea. I'll open my home and, you know, whoever wants to come, you know, maybe they'll learn something about Yiddishkeit. But guess what? The most amazing thing happened. Slowly but surely, all of humanity showed up. I really mean it. It started with just the poor, the hungry, people had no place to eat. But then the underprivileged, the lonely, the homeless, drunkards, and weirdos, a lot of weirdos. And then living in the heart of Jerusalem, backpackers, hippies, tourists, widows, single moms, very often with many of their children in tow, older people with no families, neighbors, friends, anybody and everybody. And soon enough, there were 50, 80, 100 people showing up at her door on a regular Friday night and Shabbos morning. Charedim, yeshivish, chassidim, irreligious, newly religious, modern, secular, Sephardim, yeshiva kids, seminary girls, non-Jews, tourists, Europeans, or it sounds funny, a lot of things I'm going to say today, this sounds very strange, Africans, Asians, priests, Arabs. It became known. It's like, oh, must have gotten like on a website or something, you're an American traveling to, Fiji, or Nepal. You Google it. Oh, here it says. Oh, yeah, you want to go here? Check out this place. So people go to the Kotel, and then you go to the machlasses, And it was like an experience, and people would come to see. Oh, here's a Jewish experience, and that's exactly what they got. I mean, I'll tell you my experience. I was 22, and I was learning at Yeshiva University, and they have a kollel in Yerushalayim, learning for smicha. And that was my plan. And a childhood friend of mine, who's sitting in this room right here, his name is Gershon. I've thought about you so many times the last couple of weeks, Gershon. Gershon's dad and I. And I'll never forget, we were standing in Kemar Asha. I don't know if you remember this, but I do. And he said, Avram, you're going to Gruz. The Gruz Beis Medrash shares a facility with the yeshiva called BMT, Beis Medrash Torah, right? No longer exists. And there's a rabbi there who teaches at BMT. His name is Rabbi Machlis. Check him out. I think you're going to like him. I'm like, okay. Interesting, okay. And then I'm walking away and he tells me, he screams over my shoulder, and Avram, if you decide you want to go out, go talk to his wife. She's a good shach. I was like, okay, all right, fine, So I went to Eretz Yisrael, I went to the Gruz Kollel, I learned the Beis Medrash, and you couldn't help it. Like Rabbi Machlis was in there, Beis Medrash, and he was like the Pied Piper. All the kids in the BMT were like following him around. Everything he said was beautiful. He was like a magnetic personality. And you couldn't not get to know him. So we got to schmooze and got to learn. And after a while, he's like, listen, why don't you come for Shabbos? I'm like, come for Shabbos? Like, why? I'm set up. I'm okay. Kept on asking me that. You don't come for Shabbos? I'm like, no, I'm all right, So little did I know what was going on in that house on Shabbos. I didn't know. So After a while, months later, in the mid-year, I ended up, I was with him, we were learning someplace, and I you know, we passed in his homily. I went home. And I was greeted with such warmth, such love. The rabbanit was like, welcomed me as if she knew me, you know, my whole life. And sat me down. It was like the regular, it's like the regular, you know, just a regular treatment that anyone could, a whole meal. Just a regular afternoon. It was like a regular weekday. A whole meal, gone, to meet my family, this, that. And you gotta believe me, there's no way in the world I would start, you know, I would try to like schmooze with my rabbi's daughter. You know what I'm saying? You gotta be crazy. You know, I would never do that. I mean, come on. Right? But it came after Pesach, and I remembered, you know, I said to myself, you know, I think I'm just, you know, I'm ready to go out. And I remember what Gershon told me. I said, you know, this is marvelous, you know. I think I'm ready to go out, you know. You have any ideas? And that's really a whole story by itself. You know? I'm not going to go into all the details on that one. But the bottom line is I hit the jackpot. I won big, big. Best thing that ever happened to me by far in my lifetime. And I married an angel. I married an angel. And my wife was born born into a reality which was so, it's pure, pure selflessness. Pure selflessness. You understand, when I got married to my wife, she couldn't cook for two people. She could cook for 100 people. You know, that's the truth. So we got married, she said, make dinner. I'm like, honey, you know, I love the food, but I just cannot eat 50 pieces of chicken. I can't do it. You know, she had never cooked for two people. It's like a novel idea, two people. And I'll never forget, we were thinking about, you know, trying to buy a, you know, move into an apartment. And I said, Yocheved, you know, I really feel, we had a couple of kids, I really feel like we should try to, you know, arrange it that our children should all sleep in the same room. You know, you know, I grew up, I have a lot of brothers, and I think it's nice to learn how to share. You know, so today, you know, it was their own room, you know. I mean, people have their own wing, you know, they want their own wing, you know, forget their own room. And I said, you know, I think we should, let them share a room. It's good for them. My wife turns to me and she says, you shared a room? I shared a bed. My wife is the oldest of 14 children. And, you know, my wife slept on one side, you know, one end of the bed, and her sister slept on the other end of the bed. And that was the way it is, you know. Until one day my wife came home, and there was a homeless man in her bed. And she goes to her, sleeping in her bed, and she goes to her mom and says, Ima, somebody's sleeping in my bed. It sounds like Goldilocks, right? There's somebody sleeping in my bed. And her mom's like, yeah. Yeah, he came this morning and he has no place to live and he was very tired and he was very hungry. And, you know, when he wakes up, he's gonna leave and gonna change his sheets. And that was life. That became just the regular life, regular living, regular business at the Machlas home. It's not just my wife. You couldn't avoid being affected. That's all the children. They just don't have a bad bone in their body. All they know is kindness. And let's take a moment to say that Rabbanit Machlis, one of her many causes, she had many, was having children. Having children. When she was a teenager, she came to visit Israel. And she went to the Har Herzl, right? Everyone knows what that is. It's the military cemetery in Yerushalayim. And she wrote in her diary and she said, look at all these kids. Look at all these young kids taken away from us. Who's going to replenish? Who can bring back those kids? And she wrote and she said, I want to bring back those kids. I want to have as many children as I can. And she would talk to people about having children. Do you talk to people that have Jewish children? One of the themes about everything I say tonight is, it sounds, you just have to believe me, but for every story I tell, there's another 50, there's another 100 stories that I don't tell. And I can tell you so many stories just about that. But you understand something, that the Torah tells us of the great mitzvah of Puravu. And the mitzvah of Puravu is not just to have children, but to raise them. And to raise them in the image of God, in which they were created, in which we were created. And it's kind of like the motto, you know, the Machlis family, you know, hatch them, match them, dispatch them. And essentially, it's cloning. It's cloning. That's really what it is. Once you develop yourself in character, and you become great, you just clone yourself. That's the concept, you understand? I mean, that's what it means. That's what the Rebbe Shlomo had in mind. So my wife tells me that it's before my time, a time that, you know, it got to a point where the house was busy constantly. It wasn't just Shabbos, but all the time during the week. People coming in and out, but Shabbos, that's the main time. But that's when the crowds really show up. And it was a Friday night, and the house is packed. The house is packed. And there's a knock on the door, and a guy says, you know, can I come in, right? And the machlis is like, sure, please, right? If anyone has ever been there, right? You know what I'm talking about. Sure, of course there's room, please. Other guests are like, what? You know, it's like breathing room only in here. Like, oh, it's plenty. We just love this room. And the guy says, okay. And then he says, and can I bring in my donkey? So the mouth is like, no, sorry, you know, we love animals, but you know, there's no room for that. He says, what do you mean? My donkey, I brought my donkey. You know, it's the Middle East, you know. So I brought my donkey here, you know. And they said, no, I don't think the donkey made it in that night. But the fact that you just understand some of the types of people who could show up, you never know. And when I first got married, and recently this is there's a lot of stories going around. When I first got married, my dad, you know, my father-in-law, he had a car. I'm the son-in-law, I would borrow the car. It was a van. And I remember, I'll never forget this one. I took the keys and I went to the parking lot and I started the car. And I put it into, you know, drive. And suddenly, I was terrified. What was very jolted. And someone screams from the back of me. I turn around and there's a guy sleeping in the back seat. And then I look over the next seat, there's also another guy. And he's like, where do you think you're going? It's early. I'm like, I'm so sorry. He's like, you know, quiet down up there. And I'm so, please forgive me. I didn't mean to disturb you like that. Right? And that was the way it was. Again, it sounds funny to you, but just totally regular. People would sleep anywhere. Yeah? People sleep under the table. And the machlis is, you know, on the couch. You know, I'm talking like in the backyard, dens, you know, downstairs couch. You know, like the couch. You know, right when you walk in the living room. You can sleep on the couch, on the floor, anywhere. And the van means, you know, there's a couple of more places for people who don't have a place to sleep. So, I guess, you know, some of you are starting to wonder, and everybody's wondering this question. I mean, how in the world is this... How does this develop? Like, who does things like this? You know, how do you understand this? How do you understand that someone so ordinary can become so extraordinary? And like I'm telling you, certainly from my experience, the extraordinary became ordinary. It wasn't like, you know, it was like, wow, it was just regular. This is the way things go. A lot of people have asked me that question. I've been thinking a lot about it, and I want to share with you what I think. There's an amazing, amazing Rashi in this week's Parsha, the very beginning, we just read. The Pasuk says, Vayomar Adonai, im namat tzasichen be'enecha, al na ta'avor me'al avdecha. It means, translated, my master, right? Adonai, please don't go away. Please don't go away. Says Rashi, I'm not sure exactly what this means. Two interpretations. Number one, Adonai refers to my master. Lashon Chol. Avram is speaking to these Arabs, these idolaters who were coming from Sodom. And he says, hey, my master, please, don't go away. Come in. I have something to eat. Pshat number two. Vayomar, Ado, the name of God. Lashon Kodesh, says Rashi. He's speaking to Hashem, and he says, hold on a second. Hashem, just don't go away. Right? I got some dirty, barbarian, savage idolaters who are coming from Sodom, and I got to go take care of them. Right? So Hashem, just hold on a few minutes. I'll be right back. Consider the suffix of Chazal. Consider Rashi's confusion. Unable to discern who Avraham Avinu is speaking to. Here are the choices. An idolater or the Melech Malchei Hamlachim. Consider the following. You hear me on the phone, right? And you're just, you can overhear my conversation. Hello? Yes, Your Majesty. Yes, Your Highness. What else can I do for him? What else can I do for him? Oh, yes, I'll be there as soon as, will you tell me when? I'll do it, right? And I give you choices, you know, multiple choice. Who am I speaking with? The janitor that cleans the toilets? Or the President of the United States? Could you consider the possibility that you'd be unable to discern who I'm speaking with? And that is the suffix of Rashi, of Chazal. Because Avraham Avinu clearly spoke with such unbelievable respect to a regular, any ordinary human being, the same way he would speak to God. And the reason, as is clear from the Gemara, is because he recognized that every human being is a Tzelem Elokim. And every person themselves is created in the image of God. So consider, there are two major loves in Judaism. V'ahavta Hashem Elokecha and V'ahavta Elokecha Kamocha. And Rabbanit Heni Machlis, a blessed memory, had a never-ending otzer, never-ending storehouse of love for the Ribbono Shel Olam and love for human beings. And she treated them the same. And she recognized that the holiest thing anybody can ever do is give someone something to eat. You know, we see a sitter falls on the floor, everyone runs to kiss it. Ooh, let's run to kiss it. And what about a Jew? What about when a Jew falls on the floor? Who runs to pick them up and give them a kiss? Kal v'chomer not to push them down in the first place. Ben Adam L'Makom is great. But the highest level of Ben Adam L'Makom is Ben Adam L'Chavero. And so, consider that your own child would call you on the phone and say, Mom, we just got married, you know, and I know we were supposed to have Sheva Brachas and it fell through. We have no place to have Sheva Brachas. Could you help us? Maybe we can make Sheva Brachas at your house, Ima? What do you think Mom would say? Yeah, sure I can have Sheva Brachas at our house. Of course. So this is what happened on a regular basis. People would call, you know, Rabbi Machlis, oh yeah, listen, we need to make Sheva Brachas. Can you make Sheva Brachas for us? She said, of course. Even perfect strangers would call. They would have weddings in the house all the time. All the time, weddings. And Mrs. Machlis would shop for them, cook them, you know, serve them, clean up after them at her own expense. Weddings. I remember, like, I would go to the house. Yeah, whenever, you know, Sunday, who knows when, I'm showing up to the house, just walking in. I'm like, oh yeah, can you sing me out here? You know, like, just, oh yeah, sure. You know, like, just like regular, like, on the, it was like, and there was nothing extraordinary, but it was totally ordinary. People would come to sit Shiva in the house. People would be on house arrest in their house. I kid you not. I remember about a year ago, and Mrs. Machlis was, you know, by the way, sick for years already. And they had business as usual the entire time. I have so much to say. There's no way I'm going to be able to say say a little bit, whatever I can. So there was this guy who, I don't know, he was violent. I don't know what happened there. He was going to be put in jail. And he couldn't go home. His wife threw him out of the house. I remember all the details. He was in house arrest at the Machlis house. He had 11 kids. 11 kids. Can you imagine? The Machlis have their own 14 kids. I'm like, yeah, sure, yeah, there he is. You know, his 11 kids in house arrest at their house. Runaways from all over the world ended up in their home. People would just, you know, I don't know, run around wherever it was, Lakewood, Brooklyn, you know, anywhere, everywhere. Where do you go to Yerushalayim, they run away, and where do you end up? Inevitably, people would show up at their door. And you're totally welcome here. You're totally welcome here. Not once or twice, you know. For days, for weeks, for months. A guy got up at the shiva. Big beard, payas. He says, I am embarrassed to say this. But 17 years ago, I was on my way to marry a non-Jewish girl. And someone said to me, what do you go to the machlis? I said, why? He said, just go. Check it out. It'll be a good time. I went to the machlis. Henny Machlis spent days talking with me. Just weekdays. Days feeding me, schmoozing with me. After a few days, you know, I said, listen, now we were thinking, talking it over. And I saw a little bit of a different perspective. I changed things a little bit. People would go shopping in their home. Yeah. They would show up with a shopping cart and say, oh, do you mind if I have a couple of things? You know? And they would like take things off the shelf, you know, put it into their shopping cart and nice, you know, welcome. Come back again. The night before my mother-in-law's first surgery, she made a wedding in her home. Her daughter said to her, what are you doing? Like, you're having a big surgery tomorrow morning? She said, no, it's good. It's good, it'll be a schus. And she served the whole wedding in her home. Everybody's asking me, tell me a story about Rabbi Nachman Machlis. That's what everyone wants to know. And I say to them, a story about Mrs. Machlis. Her whole life is a story. Is the story. And in trying to capture the single most overarching attribute of the Rabbanit, I have to use the word accepting. This is so important. Because anybody, as a friend of mine said, anybody can copy. Anybody can try to have a lot of guests. But nobody, you can't fake loving somebody. She doesn't work. Mrs. Machlis was the most accepting person I've ever met in my life. And it was for real. Anybody who ever met her, it just felt so good around her. You'd have to be crazy. You'd have to be crazy not to come back to that house. I did. And so did anybody who walked through those doors. You know, there's a person, I'm not going to mention his name, who's a very, very prestigious Jew. Very. It's a name I think most people, maybe everyone would know. And when he comes to Yerushalayim, he goes to the machlis. I would say, like, what are you doing here? Like, go eat in your hotel, you know? You need a meal? Like, why would you be here? And he said, I feel more comfortable here than anywhere else. Anywhere. Because here people just, the machlis, they just like me for who I am. Not because of my prestige or my position or, you know, my status or stature. That really showed me, like, this is what it means to accept somebody. Rabbi Machlis always says, we say on Pesach night, kol dichrin yeseh liyechal, kol ditzrich yeseh liyivsach. So ask Rabbi Machlis, what's the difference? Why are you just repeating it? Kol dichrin means, in Aramaic, anybody who's hungry, come eat. Kol ditzrich, anyone who's needy, come in. So what do you mean? Anyone who needs to eat, anyone who's needy, isn't that the same thing? Says Rabbi Machlis, no, it's not. Kol dichrin is people who are, they have no food, they're hungry. Kol ditzrich means it speaks to the people who have plenty of food, but they lack the words of encouragement. They lack acceptance. They lack love. They lack meaning. They lack an environment. Therefore, like I said, all different people from all different backgrounds would feel comfortable. Sometimes too comfortable. People were like made to feel part of the family. But you understand that, you know, they still weren't actually biological children. So the Machlises have, you know, a very, very close relationship with their children. And they have what we call an early meal. Right? There's going to be a meal. There's going to be a million zillion people. So let's have a meal before the meal. Right? So they would, you know, as soon as Shabbos comes in, rush home, have a, you know, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, right? A quick meal, and then we open the door for the guests. But the guests were like, oh, a family meal? Yeah! And people, it just happened over time, over the years, people were like, oh yeah, a family meal, okay. And they would just walk in, and they go, oh, the family! You know, we made a bar mitzvah a couple of weeks ago. It was very painful circumstances. Rabbi Machlis passed away on Friday. And for months, we were just hoping that she would make it to the bar mitzvah. My son would ask, is Savta going to be my bar mitzvah? And finally, you know, we were there. And the Rebbe Shem had different plans, and on Friday she passed away. And a guy calls me up. He says, you know, I expect to be invited. I live in a different city than the Machlises. I live in Beit Shemesh. He's like, I expect to be invited to the family, you know, affair, event on Shabbos. You know, it was a catered meal, you know. He's like, I expect to be invited. I'm like, oh, yeah? Oh. Sorry. He's like, hey, I'm part of the family longer than you. Yeah. I know the family. I'm only married 18 years. This guy's been coming for 25 years. He's been part of the family. Oh, excuse me. You know, sure. And he came. Oh, Betty, you better believe he came. But that was it. That was it. And people would come in with special orders. It's hard to conceive, it's just hard to conceptualize such a thing, right? People would say, oh, listen, you know, I like the salad without the mayo. Could you imagine? A stranger guest walking to someone else's home, you know, and Mrs. Ma said, oh, yeah, okay. She would go back to the kitchen. There were 100 people at the table. She would go back to the kitchen and make another salad without the mayo. And this didn't happen once or twice. It would be almost like consistent. What is it, like a cafe here? You know, like people show, oh yeah, this, that. And Mrs. Machlis was like, oh yeah, he likes it without this. He likes it. There's always a vegetarian soup and a vegetarian cholent. And one time a guy showed up. He's like, I want very, very hot soup. It was a weeknight. This guy just shows up. And my sister-in-law told me this. And she was there. She's like, there is no, you know, there's no soup of the day today. Sorry. You know, there is no hot soup. You know, he's like, well, so what should I eat then? And she says, I don't know. You know, why don't you help yourself to the fridge? You know, of course that would never happen in my house. You know, help yourself some straight walk in, help yourself to the fridge. Okay, but that was her diary. You know, help yourself to the fridge. That's the way it works there, right? Mrs. Machlis, however, heard this conversation from the back room, and she came running in. She says, she turns to her daughter. She says, What are you doing? Who knows when the last time you ate was? She says, well, you sit down. I'll get you hot soup. You sit down. You sit right here. I'll get you hot soup. That was the way it was. That's just the way. There's no righteousness or this is special. Here's a person. And the kids would ask her a question you would all wonder. Like, doesn't she notice? Doesn't she see? Like, these people are rude and people would show up obnoxious and crass. Don't you realize that you know, these people would come and are making long distance phone calls, you know, when they think you're not looking? You know, this is, you know, 20 years ago, long distance phone calls were expensive. And she would say, don't judge them. The rabbinate would say, leave them alone. You're showing up, meeting this guy. He's 40 years old. You're opening a book at chapter 40. How do you expect to understand the story? Do you know about what happened to him when he was young? Do you know the difficulties he's going through? Leave him alone. We're not allowed to judge anybody. In the Machlis house, there's a rule. The rule is, We don't talk about people. We talk about ideas. And if someone starts to talk about somebody, that's what he's met with. Oh, excuse me, we don't talk about people. We talk about ideas. Are you starting to see? You'd have to be crazy not to return to such a place and come back for more. More great food, more great wisdom and inspiration, more great love and acceptance. So, what would happen again and again and again? It's like almost like the operative word. You meet someone who went to the Machlokes, they say, "Oh yeah, I was just transformed. I went in there. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it." And you know the stories I'm going to say, you're not going to believe them. You're not going to believe them. But I'll repeat myself. For the stories I say, there's another 100 that I'm not saying. Where people would walk in there and they say, "Oh my, I have to stay here, or I have to make a life change. I have to be different. I have to be better." People would just convert to Judaism. Non-Jews. I remember a story about a woman who walked in, and she walks over to Mrs. Machlis and she says, "Mrs. Machlis, I just want to thank you for everything you've done for me." And Mrs. Machlis looks at her and she says, "You know, listen, she has a lot of guests, you know, but everything I've done for this woman, I don't remember." And she says to her, "You know, I'm sorry, I don't remember, you know, meeting you before." And the woman says, "Oh no, this is our first time meeting." So she says, "So what have I done for you?" And she said, "I'll tell you. 5 years ago, my sister came to Israel. She passed through Jerusalem. And she came here for a Shabbat. And she was so moved by what she saw, she decided to convert to Judaism. And so did I." And like I'm telling you, all the time. Priests who came in and were so confused by what they saw. This is a Jewish family? And people would end up converting it. And it wasn't like Rabbi Machlis is not trying to, you know, proselytize people. There was even a guy who actually changed his name to Machlis. I'm serious. This guy showed up to Israel and he's like, "Where am I supposed to go?" He showed up, said, "Poor fellow, you know, he's like, you're like, where do I go? You know, no place to go. You go to the Kotel. Where am I supposed to go? Yeah, go to the Machlis." You know, he showed up the Machlis, and he was met like the usual, you know. And this poor guy couldn't really talk too much. And when he walks into the house, he's like, and he's showing Mrs. Machlis a piece of paper. She says, "Oh, you made Aliyah?" He's like, and it said there, you know, Avram Machlis. He had changed his name. It's a story about a bunch of years ago, there was this woman who couldn't have children. And she would come every Friday and bring 10 heads of cabbage, to the Machlis family. You know, for the guests. And hopefully it'll be a schus for her for children. Well, one day, someone walks into the house, it was a weekday, and says, "Mrs. Machlis, can I speak to you outside?" I'm someone from the church. And there was a woman in the church, and, you know, she had a baby at a wedlock. And she can't keep the baby. He's in the church. So we're trying to figure out what to do with the baby. And this woman said, "I only want one person to raise this child. Mrs. Machlis." This one, I was like, you know, I got 14 children of my own, you know. She took the baby and she gave it to this woman who had no children. But the story again sums up. I remember a German tourist. You see, one of the things at the Machlis home is, and for anyone who's been there, just they'll nod their head, and for anyone who hasn't, it's like, you'll just have to go and see for yourself. Part of the deep expression of acceptance, and it's, like I said, it's totally authentic, is that if you walk through our doors and you're worthy of being here, you're also worthy of sharing some of your beauty with everybody else and us? So maybe you could teach us something. And after, you know, Rabbi Machlis teaches at the table on Shabbos, you know, shares, and Rabbi Nit Machlis always would share, you know, she'd pass through the tables, you know, with a tray in one hand and a baby in the other, and she'd say, you know, the Baal Shem Tov says, you know, she'd tell a story, or, you know, it's always something beautiful and inspirational, right? And after that, okay, so anybody's invited to speak. And I remember a German tourist got up. She's weeping. She says, I just can't believe this is a Jewish home. This is a Jewish home. I'm so embarrassed. I'm so embarrassed. But what our people did to your people. This is a manifestation of the words of the blessing that Hashem said to Avraham Avinu. V'nivrechu v'cha kol mishpachos ha'adama. What does it mean to have a family? All the families of the world will try to model themselves after the Jewish family. I'm going to run out of time like I always do. A couple of words about the first Ava, Ava Samako. Mrs. Machlis had a tremendous amuna. Tremendous amuna. And she always said everything's going to be fine. Anything about everything, always, it's going to be fine. We're doing our best. Hashem's going to take care of it. I remember one time there was a chicken shortage or something. I don't remember exactly. And it's Friday afternoon, and, you know, there's like a, you know, 1,000 people going to come for Shabbos. No chicken. I'm like, what are you going to do? It's fine. It was always fine. It was never any money. It was fine. Never any money. Fine. You know, this went wrong. That went wrong. There's Mishamayim. He was like, big smile, right? Ima. He goes, Mishamayim, it's fine. It's good. You know, it'll be good. We'll try our best. That wasn't meant to be right now. And I'm like thinking, like, what do you mean? It's like Friday. You know, it's Friday afternoon. And I don't remember the details. It was years ago, but the door opens and it's something that's crazy. Someone shows up with like these cases of chicken. I don't know what happened. You know, there was somewhere, something. I don't even remember the details. I just remember I was like totally shocked. And that, see, the most shocking part of the story was she was like, oh yeah, okay, let's put them in the oven. You know, just like, and I'm like, look, you know, look what just happened. She's like, oh yeah, okay, you know. And she was like Rashi says in the Parsha, she was Mulumedes Benisim. Stuff like this would happen all the time. All the time. She wouldn't have this, she would need this, she would have that. This happened in New York also. She was in New York undergoing treatments at Sloan Kettering. She never had a ride to the hospital, a ride there, a ride back. You know, one time a mitzvah tank showed up. She was, oh, mitzvah tank, great. Yeah. She was loving it. So there's Israeli couples like schmoozing there, you know, and she's talking to them and they're secular. And she's like, oh, listen, you know, tell me about what you do. This, that. And she said, oh, you know about Taras and Mishpacha? She's talking about Taras and Mishpacha. She got a ride in the mitzvah tank. Don't ask her, got a ride back to where she needed to go. Anyway, she's talking to this Israeli couple and they say, well, you know, what can we do for you? You know, you understand you're not feeling well. She says, oh, what can you do for me? You can keep Taras and Mishpacha. So the woman says, no, yeah, what can we do for you? She says, oh, what can you do for me? You can keep Taras and Mishpacha. She would reach out, and she understood that if you really want to love someone, make sure they have something to eat. If you really want to love someone, don't be afraid to give them what they really want. Give them what their neshama needs. And she would talk to people. Oh, did you put on tefillin? I have so many stories to tell you. The morning of her brain surgery, she had numerous surgeries. We're talking about, again, Sloan Kettering, arguably the best cancer hospital in the world. Neurosurgery, arguably the most advanced right? Medical procedure in the world, right? And I think it was the head of the department, was her surgeon. And it's the morning of the surgery, and she says to him, and they're schmoozing, you know, they got to know each other, Jewish guy. And he says to her, she says to him, I just want to let you know, doctor, that you're not doing the surgery. Guy says, what do you mean? He goes, yeah, you're not doing the surgery. God's doing the surgery. So the guy says, whoa, she has guts. You know, talk to me that way. And then she says, and tell me, did you put on tefillin this morning? Now again, don't judge her. If you don't know her, you're like, what? How can you say that? If you do know her, this doctor felt so comfortable in her presence. I mean, you know, she really loved every person. Right? So she says, listen, you know, it's very important. She would talk to him about that. And someone said to her, listen, you know, cancer, it could ravage your body, has a life of its own. And she would say, that's a lie. Hashem controls every cell, every second. You know, a month or so ago, too, her doctor said to her, you know, honey, why don't you go home? Go home to your family. There's nothing I can do. And she got very upset. She says, how could you say that? How could you say that? Who's in charge here? Who's going to decide if I'm going to live or die? You? And she used to say, v'rapo, v'rapo, y'rape, not v'rapo, v'nabe. Well, you're a prophet? She walked out of the doctor's office and she told her children, I'm never going back to this doctor. This is not my doctor anymore. Weeks later, the doctor called. Or days later, the doctor called and said, you know, I just want to apologize. I'm not used to talking to people like that. I'm not used to talking to people who have such conviction. Such dedication and awareness of God and godliness. And Rosh Hashanah, she had fainted, she was on the way to the hospital and she was davening. And her children said, what are you davening? And she says, what do you mean? She mentioned somebody's name. They have no children. And they really want to have children. She's davening for them. This is what she's davening for. She says, hey, it's Rosh Hashanah. On Yom Kippur. She was very sick. And she turns to her kids and she says, listen, I know that you're going to be, you know, you have limited time to daven. You have limited time to daven, so don't daven for me. Don't daven for me. Daven for the Geula. If I live or I die, that's not going to change anything. It's just, you know, it's not going to change the Geula. You only have a certain amount of time and energy. Just daven for the Geula. If there's a Geula, I'll be fine anyway. And my sister-in-law told me she said it many times over Yom Kippur. In the hospital in Sloan, she kept on saying, what am I doing here? Why do I keep on having to come back here? It must be that I have a mission. It must be that Hashem's putting me here for a reason. So she started saying, this is months and months, she's there for, I told you, a long time. She started giving her children jobs. You, right, because a few of her daughters were with her. You, your job, daven all for all the sick people in this hospital. So many sick people. That's why we're here. You're going to daven for the sick people. And you, your job is to daven all the neshamas. There's so many neshamas in Manhattan. There's so many Yiddish neshamas that are totally lost. Your job is the neshamas. And she was going to repeat it. So, you know, we're talking about something else. Well, the neshamas. You daven for the neshamas and you daven for the sick people. A woman told me that, you know, there's a group of people who come from all over. You know, unfortunately, they bring people for treatment in Sloan. So one from Lakewood, she's been doing this for years. Tzidkanios. And she's in the waiting room, and there's a woman in the waiting room, and they're talking. They get to talking, and this woman she sees is like full of vigor and vivacious and, you know, full of love and positivity and talking and chizuk and the great Torah. And then just schmoozing, she's like, wow. After a long while, she says, tell me who you're here with. She says, what do you mean? You know, you came to be with somebody, to be mechazet them. She says, no, I'm here for treatment. This woman was shocked. She's here for treatment. She's giving me chizik this whole time. She's here for treatment. But anyone who met Mrs. Machlis, you know. She would always say, she would tell her children, don't ever say that you can't help someone. Don't ever say that you can't help someone. Because after all the food and drinks and smiles and encouragement and what do you mean you can't help them? You can daven for them. You can daven for them. You can always daven for them. And she would walk down the street and she would see someone in trouble. You would see someone who's like, someone she couldn't even talk to. Some guy who's, struggling with something. And she would say, Hashem, please, tisamechoto. Help him with his difficulties. He's struggling. This is usual all the time, wherever she went. I remember when I first got married, we're sitting in the room, everyone's talking, and suddenly, the place goes dead quiet. I'm like, what's going on here? And Mrs. Mao says, what, you don't hear? I said, hear what? She says, hear the siren? I said, what? She says, yeah, you don't hear, there's an ambulance. That means that somebody is in trouble. So we all stop, we die. What do you mean? There's another Jew in trouble, that's how it goes, right? We adopted that in my own family, my own wife. I mean, she does it anyway, but Thursday night, they would cook for Shabbos, and have to peel a lot of potatoes and cut a lot of carrots and onions. And she would always tell her daughters, they're cutting onions. You're crying anyway. You're crying. Don't waste those tears. Don't waste those tears. Daven for their sick people. Daven for Mashiach. Daven for a good husband. I think my wife daven with a husband. Just kidding. Daven, and that's how it went. She never gave up. She had tremendous willpower and amuna. And Sarah Yemenu, the Torah goes out of its way to say that she also had a diagnosis. The pasuk in the Torah. The pasuk says, "Atihi akara, Sarah was akara in lavalad." So what if you have a diagnosis? Hashem could do anything. The night before her surgery, how we found this out in the shiva. Rabbi Machlis, he went to the graves. The long list, some of the people on the long list of people who they had taken into their home, people they had watched over and she had cooked for and kept alive, people who they had buried because there was no one else to bury them. And he went to daven. He went to daven at their kever. They should be a Mele Sosha for her. Just like she used to say about everybody else, don't judge them. We're just in the middle of the story. She used to say about herself, it's just the middle of the story. It's very difficult to watch her suffer. She would say, it's nothing. It's just the middle of the story. You don't know what's going to happen in the end. You don't know what Hashem has in mind. And it's going to sound crazy, but she was so sick. And we had no idea that she was going to die. And it would sound so silly now to say that. But she had such emunah. And she had such nisim. I told you before, everything was a nis with her. People would ask me, how's she doing? I'd say, I don't know. The doctors say bad, but she's Mrs. Machlis. I mean, she's... anything could happen for her. She's just on a different plane. She has a different relationship with the Rabbanu Shalom. The shiva was crazy. Thousands and thousands of people came through the door. The people were sitting on the floor. You couldn't tell who was sitting shiva and who came to be menachem. People said, I'm sitting shiva too. And they would sit on the other side, on the low chairs. They would sit. They were sitting crying on the floor. You'd think that they had lost a parent. Tons of people would call her ima. They would call her ima. At the shiva, there was a woman who was an older woman. She was crying hysterically. She walked in, she could not speak. And there were so many people, you couldn't even notice. There were so many people. I walked over to her. I said, Gveret, you know, are you okay? You know, how do you know the family? She could barely talk. She says, 20 years ago, I used to clean the house. I said, oh, you know, and? She said, you're kidding? Henny Machlis, she was like my mother. I told her all my problems. I told her all my tsaras and my difficulties. She was the only one. She would listen to me and explain to me and encourage me. No one can encourage me like her. There were non-Jews who used to cry and share all their problems, and she would sit and listen and talk and encourage and encourage. You couldn't tell who the people, you know, there were people who were, they looked like rabbis and people who looked like irreligious and different types of yarmulkes. You walk through the door of the shiva and people, it's like entering, it's like a warp zone. It's like Lazar Lovo. It's amazing. You walk into that house and you can't believe it. This is like, everything stops at the threshold of the door. And on the other side of the door, it's like Mashiach tight. And there are people crying on each other's shoulders who are, like I told you, like people look like big rabbis and people who look like that. Crying at each other's shoulders. They lost a mother. They lost a mother. One guy gets up and he says, he walks in, he's like, Rabbi Machlis. And Rabbi Machlis is like looking at him. He says, you don't recognize me? He says, I'm so sorry. I've met a few people here, you know. I don't recognize you. He goes, oh, maybe you don't recognize me because the last time I was here, you know, 20 years ago, I had a yarmulke and a beard. And now I don't. And as he's talking, Rabbi Machlis says, oh, he's starting to remember him. And he says, I gave up all of Judaism. I hate rabbis. I hate Torah. This poor guy had difficult experiences. And I have nothing to do with anybody. But I heard Mrs. Machlis passed away. And I still have one Jewish hero. What can I do for her? What can I do for you? My brother-in-law Moshe, he has it in his genes. He says, what can I do for Ima?
I don't know.
Ima Brown's Philip. The guy says, whoa, whoa, whoa. He says, if you really want to know what she would want, Brown's Philip. I wasn't in the room at the time, but obviously my wife was. Everyone was there. And this guy, they brought him tefillin. He put on tefillin. I think he said he had put on tefillin 20 years or something. And they brought, he says, and one of them says, maybe you'll put a mezuzah in your house. He says, okay, fine. I'll have a mezuzah. One of the girls says, oh, I have an extra mezuzah. You know, it was like, who has a mezuzah? He can't have a mezuzah. But and in the Machlis house, I'm telling you, he's very sure the Chol Yom, this kind of stuff. The Shabbos, they ran to the funeral, you know, on Friday afternoon. That's a whole story in its own right. And they just quickly scribbled a sign, you know, there's no Shabbos. The guests showed up Friday night. They get to the door, there's no Shabbos, what's going on here? So, they go around the back. One guy opens the door. The guests show up, they just get in, go walk in. Sit down, make themselves comfortable, go into the kitchen and find some food to eat. One neighbor sees that they're eating, the Machlis, they're sitting there, guests. He goes and brings them soup. They had a regular meal. For us, that sounds insane. But that's the way it was. And that's the way it is. I have to stop. My time is over. I can't possibly really do justice. But the shiva, everyone was saying, I can't believe Ima died. I can't believe Ima died. At one point, my wife turned to me and she said, I can't believe Ima lived. I can't believe that today, this generation, it could be something like that. Someone who could be so ordinary, become so extraordinary. Someone who could leave such an enormous legacy behind, make such a big impact. One of the Divrei Torah that I used to love quoting said she would ask me. She said, Ivor, let's say you had $100. And a poor person comes and he knocks on your door. And you take out your wallet and you give him $10. How much money do you have left? Sounds like a joke, right? How much money do you have left? And of course I'd say, $90. And she would say, no. You have $10. Because the other 90 you're going to spend on your grocery bill, and you're going to shopping, and you go out to eat, and it's going to, who knows where it's going to go. But those $10 you take with you forever and ever and ever. And that being the case, Rabbi Machlis, although she died broke, she didn't have a possession to her name. For all of her jewelry or anything she ever had was stolen years and years ago by her guests. And of course she would say, don't judge them. They must have needed it. She took off her ring to wash, turn around, and it came, turn back, and it was gone. And she would say, they just borrowed it. They really must have needed it. Although she died with no physical money, she was a millionaire. She left behind 10 daughters and 4 sons. Tens of thousands of people who were so touched and so inspired, whose lives were really changed. I just want to end with one story. Last Shabbos, I was supposed to be in Denver for the Shabbos project. And then my whole world came crashing down. My wife was sitting Shiva. And this is like the big event of the year. Veil. The whole retreat, taking this Kiruv organization, to taking all the people away. How could I can't just back out. But how could I leave my wife? I can't leave my wife. How could I go? How could I not go? How could I go? How could I not go? I was so torn and so confused, as it was. I decided, am I crazy? I can't leave my wife. I wrote them an email. And I get a phone call from the head of the organization. And he says, Avram, Henny Machlis was your mother-in-law? And I'm like, I'm so scared, I'm so terrified, and they're screaming at me and yelling at me. Henny Machlis is your mother-in-law? We've been davening for Henny Machlis for months. Myself and my wife, we're broken. We're in mourning, and the whole Amisrael is in Avelis. We used to live in Yerushalayim. I know who the Machlises are. She has the biggest project in the world. Every Shabbos, she has a Shabbos project. In fact, on one Shabbos, on a single Shabbos, she has more people at her table than we're having in our entire retreat. You stay home. You take care of your wife. You take care of your family. And it says that it's true. I'm really messed up now. I don't know what I'm going to tell my guests. I don't know what I'm going to do. But you know what I'm going to tell them? I'm going to tell them about Henny Machlis. I'm going to tell them why you're not here. I'm going to tell them about a small kitchen in Yerushalayim. I'm going to tell them what Shabbos looks like. On Sunday I heard that true to his word, that's what he did. And after a while, someone got up in the audience and he says, I can't believe this. I can't believe this family, this woman. I want to do the same thing. We have to start a fund. We're going to invite people. We're going to get people, help them with food and talk to them, etc. It's just one of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of stories of the impact. Bechaya, Bemosa. May her memory be a blessing. And we learn the lessons. And we learn the lessons. And just before I got here, just got an email from Sarah Yochai Rigler. And she says, art school very, very, very badly wants the rights to write a book about Mrs. Machlis. And they're fighting. There's this whole discussion with authors. She says, I got it. And she writes, I just got this email. Would you be willing to say the following And I heard you talking, I heard you speaking in New York. Would you be willing to say the following at the end of your lecture tonight? I'm just quoting. I'm happy to share with you news which is not yet public. I guess now it is. Sari Yocheved Rigler, author of Holy Woman, will be writing a book about my mother-in-law, Be'ezrat Hashem, and Art Scroll will publish it. If anyone here would like the privilege of dedicating this book, you can please speak to me afterwards. May we learn the lessons. May we learn the lessons and we carry a memory forward. Thank you so much for coming.
Beyond.
I saw her about a month ago. She died. Thomas.
Shani here? No, she's not here. There is a. Let's see. Yeah, I don't want to. Am I being recorded?
Hold on. Just stop it.